Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements, and we'll be here for the next hour talking about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on the Walter Anderson Nursery main Facebook page. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, sir.
Everything seems to be humming along pretty nicely here for the month of August so far. I guess we're halfway through at this point, I think, aren't we?
We are.
Somewhere around there. We do have garden classes today in San Diego. It's going to be... I can't read my writing.
It's a Save Water. It's Growing Dragon Fruit with Alan Ridley.
That's right. Okay. Yep. Thank you. Yeah, I need to... I probably should have learned to read shorthand before I started taking shorthand. At 9:30 in Poway, it's going to be brassicas and winter vegetables with Farmer Roy from Poway Gardens. Always a popular speaker. Make sure you get here early and get a good seat.
He's good.
He's very good.
He's going to be a guest on the radio again in the fall to get you all set up with your winter gardening if you can't make that class.
Yeah. The amount of produce that he produces over there is... astonishing, to say the least. What does he say? 25,000 pounds of tomatoes per season. Yep. That's a lot of tomatoes.
A lot of stuff.
I know he brings in milk crates of tomatoes for us during the season when they have excess that they can't all process.
And beautiful cauliflowers and broccolis. Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So,
but you know what's funny is we're about to put our fall gardens in. That's the part that's amazing. You know,
if that's one right around the corner.
If you want to have a winter garden, this is when to do it. Likewise, the time to start your pumpkins and all your squash is in May.
It was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. Just a note, too, be aware, mark your calendars. Both stores are closing early on August 20th. Both stores will close at 2 p.m. We have a corporate event going on, and we will not be here after 2 o'clock on August 20th. And... I think that's all the updates that I have for the stores. So we will move on. And today we have a special guest in studio. We're happy to have him. And thank you very much to Engineer Todd back in the studio for giving us the referral to Richard Restuccia, who is the author of the book Waterwise Gardening. He's an acclaimed author and nationally recognized expert on sustainable irrigation. He's going to talk to us about how to determine precisely how much water your plants really need, taking into account soil type, plant variety, local climate, how often to water, key signs of overwatering and underwatering, simple techniques and tools. And, you know, watering is probably one of the most important things that you need to get a feel for if you're going to be successful either in maintaining your yard or just about any kind of plant-related hobby that you might have. So, Richard, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I want to say you guys do such a great job in educating this community. Really, really find it to be a privilege to be here.
Well, thank you. We're really happy to have you. And and like I said, thanks again for Todd for putting us in touch with you.
And Todd's parents are my neighbors.
Okay, that's right. You guys are neighbors. In a previous show we were talking about it. I had started collecting older issue. Well, the Sunset Western Garden book has gone out of print, which is unfortunate because that was our go-to reference book, still is, but has been for many, many years. And I started going back and collecting older copies of the Sunset Western Garden book. And I noticed as time progressed, more and more things were eliminated from the Sunset Western Garden book that had been there before. And it got to be more of an encyclopedia of gardening, of garden plants than there was as much how-to stuff. And I think it was in the 1954 issue I found a really interesting article. It was one of the few articles I'd ever found about. It was about watering, and it was how to water your yard and how to determine how much water you need and how to put that much water where it needs to be. So that sounds very much like what you have done and been working on professionally.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I found is I've been in this industry for almost 30 years now, and watering is tough for people to get. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why is, water's always been plentiful and inexpensive. I think we woke up a few weeks ago in San Diego and heard that the city council is proposing a 62% increase in our water rates over the next 5 years. Yep. After seeing a 30-some percent over the last few years, water is getting expensive. It's typically been something we waste in the garden, mainly because it's been inexpensive. And now I think people are really going to take the time to figure out how much water their plants actually need, because it's going to be financially rewarding for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I know one of the ones that I dealt with in my yard was a lawn, just watering lawn. And lawns take a certain amount of what I would call a rainfall equivalent to thrive. But a lot of people don't know how to determine, they don't know what that equivalent is, nor do they understand how to determine how your sprinklers work to put that equivalent on the lawn.
So, right. And so then the solution has been, right, this is what we keep on hearing, is take out the lawns.
Exactly.
But I think that is treating the symptom, not the problem.
I would agree.
Yay. Yeah. Amen.
And if I could just go on to say, please. Landscape irrigation, total use in the state of California is about 9%. Mm-hmm. And let's just assume that half of that is for turf. Mm-hmm. If we remove all the turf, replace it with nothing, and remove all the irrigation for that turf, you're only saving 4.5%.
Exactly.
I don't mind that people want to take out their turf. I'm not here to say that. What I have an issue with is people think this is going to be the solution to our water woes. Right. And it is not. They think it's a simple solution to a big problem, and the problem is much bigger, and the solution is going to be much more complicated than that.
I completely agree with you. And when you do look at the statistics and the small amount, in the big picture, home landscaping and commercial landscaping is a small amount of water use. And that's not to say that you should, that because it's so small, you should go out and water your sidewalks and everything and not worry about it, but it's not the panacea. It is not going to fix it. You could eliminate it 100% and it's not going to eliminate the problem.
Correct.
Yeah.
And we're offering rebates for $6 a square foot, right? $240,000 an acre. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we've got, it just changed recently within the last 2 years, the amount of pressurized irrigation versus flood irrigation in agriculture here in California. It just crossed over. We still have about 48% of the growers using flood irrigation, mm-hmm. those inefficient irrigation there is today. And we won't pay them a $1,500 or $2,000 an acre rebate to convert to drip irrigation. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to look at our priorities a little bit here and make some changes.
Well, it's funny. You talk about flood irrigation. I remember this from years and years and years ago, being over in Arizona, one of the hottest places on the planet, and being there in the summertime and driving around and seeing people watering commercial lawns and just their lawns in their yard by flood irrigation. And in an area that has so little water, to see them watering that way, because even back then we were conscious of how much water we use here in San Diego. But over there, I was just like, who does that? I mean, you would just be vilified in San Diego if you tried flood irrigating your lawn area or any part of your yard. Mm. I mean, it happens every once in a while when the sprinkler line breaks, but I mean, that's a rare that's a rare occurrence, and it's a different thing.
I actually grew up in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, okay.
And I was one of those people that had the valve in the corner of your yard. Mm-hmm. And you had a time. There was a bulletin at the end of the alley, 3:20 a.m., undo your valve and then close it back in 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. And in my old neighborhood, which is Central Phoenix, they're still irrigating that way. You can still get that water. That is amazing.
I see that in some of the citrus in Arizona. But, you know, you started this by saying you've been in this industry for 30 years. What is the industry specifically? And tell us a little about your background, how you got to this point.
Yeah, great. Thank you. So today I'm a senior vice president for Husqvarna Water. It is a new division for Husqvarna. Many people know us for our power tools and chainsaws.
And motorcycles.
Definitely in the 70s, 80s, right? Malcolm Smith, mm-hmm. very popular.
One of my favorite motorcyclists.
Yep, yep. Yeah. Everybody knows Malcolm.
Yeah.
So we've started this now because we really do see a need, right? As one of the most sustainable companies in the world, we're promoting conservation and sustainability all the time. And we see a big need for it here in water. But I grew up in agriculture. I've got a master's degree in agriculture. Started working for Rainbird about 30 years ago. And then I started the first water management division for Valley Crest Companies, the largest landscape contractor in the U.S. at mm-hmm. the time. It's Brightview today. And then moved back into agriculture and now to Husqvarna. Hmm.
And before we came on the air, you and I were just... we were talking about irrigation, and I had mentioned that I had just switched over to the Orbit Beehive controller, and you said Husqvarna just bought Orbit.
Yep, they did about 3 years ago.
Okay.
Now, Husqvarna owns another company called Gardena in Europe.
Oh, and, I know. Yeah, I'm familiar with
them.
And
they're the largest distributor of landscape tools and irrigation in Europe, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and Orbit was their first venture into North America, and they're going to continue.
Yeah, I think Gardena was the first sprinkler that I ever had that came with a quick disconnect.
Yep.
Yep. They had the plastic quick disconnects, mm-hmm. and they had an oscillating sprinkler. This is a long time ago, but they had an oscillating sprinkler that had a much greater efficiency than the ones that you could get here in the. Get here in the States.
Looked like it should Gilmore. Come from IKEA or something. they were very kind of streamlined. Yes.
So yeah. It's very interesting too, right? Gardena is for passionate gardeners. And as soon as I said the name, all three of you shook your head. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
Not everybody knows Gardena, but the passionate gardeners do.
We're passionate gardeners.
Yeah. You don't see it over here. You don't see it over here that much, but they do make some very, very good quality products.
Yeah, hello, I'm John, and I'm a plantaholic.
We meet once a month.
So what else can you tell us about how the industry is changing and how things are becoming more efficient?
Yeah, so we talked about solutions for the mm-hmm. water issues we're facing today. One of the biggest solutions today is, you know, technology is really changing. And you mentioned your Beehive Orbit mm-hmm. controller. The technology that you can get in a smart controller today is really incredible, right? The idea that we can check weather conditions, 17 factors of the weather, mm-hmm. every hour, and adjust your irrigation schedule on a nightly basis based on these 17 factors, this is a game changer in irrigation right now.
We're going to talk more about that. We need to take a quick break. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements and our special guest, Richard Rusticia from Husqvarna. Husqvarna Irrigation or
Husqvarna Water.
Husqvarna Water. And we've been talking about irrigation and watering your plants and making sure that they get enough water and making sure that you don't put too much water on. And we were talking about the advancements that have been made in smart irrigation. And like I had said, I had just switched over to the Orbit Beehive, which is part of Husqvarna now. And it is a smart controller. And you said that the controller actually takes into account the weather now. And various other factors. So let's talk some more about that.
Yeah, I'd love to. So a couple of things about that controller is it can be programmed in a conventional mode, or it can be switched to smart mode.
Yeah, I've been using the conventional mode so far. I haven't gotten smart enough to use the smart part yet, but I'm working into it.
But we can help with that. That's okay. The good news, and I know you're smart enough. So look, the thing about conventional controllers is this. We were taught for many years in irrigation to program your controller to the hottest month of the year, July, and then make 4 adjustments a year based on the season, right? In fall, you'd turn it down 25%. In the winter, you might turn it down to 50% or all the way off, and then back on in the spring to about 75 and up to 100 in the summer. And it makes some sense, but if you think about it, that's just 4 adjustments to your controller a year. Now, a smart controller, the Beehive controllers, for example, or our even smarter ET water controllers will measure the weather on an hourly basis, 17 factors of the weather, and take into account what's happening. And what I mean by what's happening is overcast? Is it misty today in your area of San Diego? Is it hot? Is it windy? Wind makes one of the biggest differences. So it takes these factors into account and then downloads a new schedule every day. So it will really only water when you need it. Where a conventional controller might water Monday, Wednesday, Friday, doesn't care if it rained Tuesday night, if it was overcast Wednesday, it's putting down the same amount of water. And this is where we learn in the industry, it's one of the biggest factors in the industry why we say people waste about 50% of their landscape irrigation water. Mm-hmm. And that's an issue. And as we said earlier, with prices going up, it's even more of an issue.
Yeah.
Okay, you convinced me, I'm getting one.
So then it even gets better, right? Because with these Beehive controllers, right, you can hook it up to your Wi-Fi and there's no subscription fee or anything. You just get the water savings. Now, as you step up into the smarter controllers, we're using AI very well right now. So what a good example of AI would be is these controllers in general measure something called evapotranspiration, ET for short. This is a word that gets people hung up. To simplify that word or understanding of that word, I say it's the reverse of rain, right? Rain is the water coming into the soil. Evapotranspiration is the water that's evaporating out of the soil and what the plant is using to transpire the water, right? It plants sweat and use water to pull nutrients up. So in this case, we want to measure the amount of evapotranspiration that occurs on a daily basis and then replace that water when it's needed. Now, we can measure very easily how much water a cubic foot of soil can hold.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on if it's a clay soil or a sandy soil, it's different.
Yes.
But we do know how much that water, how much that soil can hold. So then if we just simply measure the evapotranspiration to a point of about 50% depletion of water in the soil and fill it back up when it hits that 50% replacement time or that trigger, then you will end up having the most healthy, lush looking landscape you can imagine. And I always say, right, you guys are all familiar with the word hangry. I think my daughter invented it when she was a teenager. But we all know how we perform when we're hangry.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you could put a device on yourself that would give you the right amount of calories and nutrition every time you got to about 50% of hangry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would really produce. And this is what our plants can do now. And the other thing is it eliminates that overwatering and underwatering because it is doing a real calculation. Now, when I was at Valley Crest, the best water managers we had across the nation might adjust the schedule once a month. This is adjusting a schedule every day. It's just not physically possible for somebody to go out and touch all the controllers that they manage. And even if it's your one controller at your house, you won't take the time to do the calculation, do the measurements, and make the adjustment. So this does this automatically for you. It does it for free on a Beehive controller. It does it for $239 a year on a more professional, larger commercial controller. Mm-hmm. It's really, these controllers pay for themselves in a very short period of time with the water savings. And it's definitely a game changer in the irrigation world.
Well, as I had mentioned on a previous show, when I switched over to the Beehive unit, and that's the only thing that's changed in my yard. I mean, I've replaced a few sprinkler heads here and there, but the big change was the Beehive unit. my latest water bill, my June, July water bill for the city of San Diego dropped about 20% as we're getting into the hottest part of the summer. And, that was the change.
Yeah.
And the way I was able to tailor the watering schedules and the amount of water that's going on when the water is going on and the frequency, it makes a big difference.
It sure does. And if you have a lavender plant with a 12-inch root zone, you should water a certain amount of time, depending on how much water your emitter puts out. But you water a certain amount of time, and that fills that root zone full. Mm-hmm. And if it's 10 minutes or 15 minutes or 30 minutes, if you're watering with drip, maybe it's that much. And then you shut it off and you've got a full water profile. Then we measure ET and whether you water again in 1 day, 2 day, or 7 days is based on the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And with the conventional controller, you're always Monday, Wednesday, Friday for the same amount. But what really should be changing is the frequency of water, not the time. And that's the biggest difference and why you save a lot of water and money as a result of changing that frequency, not the time.
That makes perfect sense. Now on the Orbit system, one thing that I've noticed, and you can set it up by zone, is you can, and I still don't understand it completely. I'm working my way into the smart side of it, but you can set the, I guess it's the desired percentage of soil moisture per zone on the Orbit. And it can go from 100% down to, I'm guessing, somewhere in around maybe even zero. But how does that incorporate itself into the system as far as the watering is concerned?
So what I said earlier, right, is I said 50% water for trigger point.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
You water it down to 50%.
Okay.
But you can change that trigger point.
Okay.
And we know, for example, potatoes like to have wet feet.
Mm-hmm.
They might want a trigger point when you only come down 30%. Something else might like to be a little drier, right? I want to maybe dry out my roses a little bit more so I can set that trigger level down to 35.
Okay.
So you can adjust if you want to dial in your irrigation very carefully. You can make those adjustments to the trigger point at which point, which percentage point of dryness in your soil you want to water again.
And then it uses the weather information that it collects to determine how fast you're going to reach that point and adjust the schedule accordingly?
Correct.
Okay.
And what's even really incredible is, and not so important here in San Diego, but other parts of the nation that do get some rain in the summer, as I mentioned, they will fill up the profile to 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to have rain in 1 or 2 or 3 days, we might only fill up that profile to 75%. See how much rain actually falls, and then reset the irrigation schedule based on how much rain fell or didn't fall. But then you start to get this free rain, free water, and this is where we really accumulate a lot of savings in places where they do have some rain in the summertime.
Well, that was one of the things that I liked about the system. I think I've only had to use it once or twice now at this point, but you get up in the morning and you look out and it's sprinkling, pull up the phone, hit the button, rain delay, shuts the entire system off until you tell it to come back on again. And then you start moving forward again. And that alone, I shudder to think how many tens of thousands of gallons of water over my lifetime I have wasted because I did not shut my sprinkler system off during a rain event.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I just learned that I am a smart controller because we have a main controller for a lot of the property, but all of our fruit trees are on battery operated controllers throughout the property. I don't have them on automatic. I go out there and turn them on at the 7 day mark, the 8 day mark. And when I feel like if it's been overcast, I won't turn it on. So in some ways I am a manual smart controller to do that very thing that you're describing. I'm not going to turn it on if it's been cool and overcast and misty. I'll wait an extra day or two as necessary.
Yeah. When I ran San Diego Botanic Garden, if we had a good rainstorm and we could shut the water off for a week, I mean, this is when it makes real sense. That would save me $4,000 to $5,000 worth of water for 1 week. And I mean, our water bill was horrendous. And so to have that do it automatically, because there's nothing more tragic than to be driving down the road and it's pouring rain and you see sprinklers on.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And I have been I've been guilty of that myself over the years. It's just one of those things. But and that's the other thing that this new controller has made me realize and do is really take a look at not just how often I'm watering, but how I'm watering, and like you said, the various factors that go into account for it. And it's a game changer. It really is.
It helps people bring an extra focus to their water use, right? You can't manage what you don't measure, but now we're actually measuring it. And as we talk about technology and agriculture, right? We also have a product that you attach to a center pivot irrigation. These big center pivot machines, quarter mile long.
The circular one, the circular fields.
Right, yeah. Right. Millions of gallons an hour is what they're producing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And we have a customer that has 100 of them. So imagine if it's going to rain this afternoon, maybe, right? 50% chance of rain. And you've got to send two guys out in a truck to 100 center pivots to turn them all off.
Mm.
Right. And we're not talking about down the I-15 at 65 miles an hour. We're talking, dirt roads. This is hours of labor and time to do that. So you're probably going to not shut them off and water when it rains. Well, with this center pivot controller we have now, you can turn it off and off with your phone. And you can say, hey, it rained hard enough, or it's not raining enough, or whatever. But you can make that easily. And it just saves a ton of water and a ton of labor.
Yes, it absolutely would. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements, and our special guest, Richard Rusticchio. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here in KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements, and our special guest, Richard Rusticchio, the author of Water Wise Gardening, and who also works for Husqvarna Water. And we've been talking about smart irrigation, which is something that I have not always done. we were talking about the center pivots and how you don't have to send people out into the field anymore to turn those on and off. That was one of the greatest things about the new controller for me, is being able to work in my yard and not have to run back and forth and manually turn things on and off. I can turn on a sprinkler, and if something is haywire, I can immediately turn it off again, go and fix it and test it. The labor savings for that has just been phenomenal.
And you're one person.
And I'm one person.
Think about the water manager for a large commercial contractor, Landcare, Brightview.
Yeah.
They're each managing 100 controllers. So.
And I remember talking to professional landscape maintenance people, and when they were in, even here, the people that maintain our landscape out front, if they wanted to do that, the most efficient way for them to do it was a two-man job with two-way radios. And you would have somebody at the controller, okay, turn on station one now. And then the person at the controller would turn it on. Guy was have a broken sprinkler. Okay, shut it off. And then they would shut it off and fix. So it was a two-man job on site. And now you need not even be there. I mean, you can just do it all on its own. And you talk about the center pivot irrigation systems. That really is that's a fascinating irrigation system. And one of the things that never occurred to me about it, although from a physics standpoint it makes perfect sense with the conservation of angular momentum, is that that outside wheel has to turn a lot faster than the wheel that's closest to the pivot. So the way that whole system works and moves in a smooth arc, it really is a fascinating irrigation system, how that was developed and how they came up with that.
It is. It's a fascinating piece of engineering.
Yeah.
And then with our app, a grower can plug in, I want an inch and a half of water over the next 2 days, and it will flow the water appropriately to the speed at which that center pivot is turning.
You know, speaking of the amount of water in inches, that was one of the things that we've talked about with our customers in the past, and when they have issues with their lawn, especially where they have dry spots in their lawn, where the system runs but they still end up with dry patches. And what we've told people in the past is get the wide mouth, disposable, clear cocktail glasses and set them up in a grid on your lawn and run your sprinklers. And if the glass that's in the middle of the dry spot doesn't have any water in it, but all the other ones have a quarter to a half an inch of water in it, then you know where the problem is. It's either a clogged sprinkler head or a misdesigned system. And it can be a real good tool for people to see where the water is going and how much water is actually coming out. And that was one of the things in that Sunset Garden Book article. It explained how to do that, which I had, prior to seeing that old article, I had never seen it in print anywhere before.
But yeah.
It's a quick and dirty way to check and see how much rainfall equivalent your sprinkler system is putting out.
As somebody who sees a lot of lawns, I mean, I see more lawns than I even know what to do with, but I'd say probably 10% are designed properly. Most of them are not, so that they don't have proper overlap. They're not getting head-to-head coverage. And so what happens is people waste water overcompensating to cover the dry areas, and then they're saturating the areas that don't need it. And so getting the right landscape contractor on the front end is really important.
We call this distribution uniformity in irrigation.
Okay.
And right, most people just make the assumption, if I'm getting an inch in this corner, I'm getting an inch in the other corner, and it's oftentimes very different. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a system that is only 50% uniform, it means that if you need an inch of water, you need to put down 2 inches, because only 50% is going to actually reach the plants, or you're going to have to water so much in one area, right, to overcompensate for the bad irrigation system.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, the other thing that seems to be a serious problem, well, I shouldn't say a serious problem, but a common problem, even amongst landscape professionals or supposedly landscape professionals, is drip irrigation. And when people come in, 90% of the time, the problem that people have with drip irrigation is, and even a system that's been professionally installed, they'll come in and they'll retrofit their entire sprinkler irrigation system, and they think that the systems work the same, and they don't. And drip is designed to put out small amounts of water over a long period of time, and people just don't seem to be able to wrap their heads around that concept. Even the professional people that put it in, and we see that all the time.
All too often, people will come in with a dying tree or shrub and say, well, you know, it's being watered twice a week for 6 minutes. And then you find out there's 1 half-gallon emitter on one side of the plant. We've got a problem here.
Yeah. So I can see where with the new systems that are out there and the smart systems, as far as adjusting them is concerned, easy to dial in the duration's probably the easiest thing, one of the easiest things to change on those systems. And if you see where you're not getting enough water in one particular area, it's just a matter of picking up the phone, open it up, swing that dial around a little bit more, and then let the smart system follow along on top of that. Once it knows what you're doing, then the rest of the system will go on its own.
Yeah, you're right. And drip is a challenge for a lot of people, just because they're not that used to it. It hasn't been that widely accepted yet. But when we talk about uniformity of a system, most spray systems, if you're lucky, are about 50% of the water is getting to where you want.
Makes sense.
With a drip system, we use a 90 to 93% uniform. So almost all the water is getting to where you want it to go. But this concept of, I've got a 1/2-gallon emitter, and so now I have to run it an hour, right? This seems like way over. But you know, a spray head that's a 360 spray head, is using 2 gallons a minute, and a 1/2-gallon an hour, you know, you're getting a 1/2-gallon in 1 hour's time. So there is a big difference. And so that's a challenge. The other thing that we see as the biggest challenge is the maintenance of the systems. People just don't know, right? Our help desk people are trained to ask them, when was the last time you cleaned your filter? And the biggest response we have to that is, what filter?
Right? Yeah.
There's a filter?
So there's a little bit more to learn because there's minerals, things in the water that will clog up an emitter. Mm-hmm. So there's certain maintenance that you have to do, some flushing that you have to do. But if you're willing to do that on a monthly basis in the summer, when you're using your system a lot, you're going to have a good system that saves you water and really helps your plants.
You know, speaking of maintenance, I remember out at the Rose Garden out at Barona, which we've talked about in the past and what a hidden gem it actually is. All that is all on drip irrigation. And they had, talking about maintaining drip irrigation, their big problem was rodents and squirrels chewing into the drip lines to get to the water so that they had something to drink. And they countered that by putting saucers underneath each of the rose bushes. And it had a feeder line from the drip system. So when the drip system turned on, it filled the saucer up with water so that when the rodents would come into the area, which they do, they'd find the water source without having to chew into the system. And it dramatically reduced their maintenance just because they didn't have to go through and repair all the drip lines all the time from the rodents chewing into them to get the water out of them.
What a great story. I've not heard that one before. That's a great solution.
We were all curious. We asked the guy that was maintaining it, is that for, do you want more humidity? Why are you doing that? And he said, no. And as Ken said, they just had their emitter going in there and overflow and still watered the plants, but they were always full.
Yeah.
They always had water in them and that kept them from chewing into the pipes to get to the water.
There's enough there for me and them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we've been talking about the amount of water in inches, just so people can get an idea, because I don't think anybody really equates that when they're watering their yard. They're not looking at it as how many inches of water am I putting onto that. So just in general, how much water from an inches of irrigation standpoint or an inches of rainfall would a typical lawn require?
Yeah, so and the irrigation industry didn't help us on this, right? Because we measure evapotranspiration in inches. Mm-hmm. You've got to replace an inch of water for your turf, basically a week in the summertime here in San Diego, depending on what part you live in. But that's a good general rule. But then when we buy heads from the irrigation store, we buy it in gallons. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so you have to make either that conversion or you have to look at the manufacturer's table that's associated with precipitation rates. Mm-hmm. And that will tell you, run this at this pressure for an hour and it's X amount of inches. So typically we think of a spray head at about 1 3/4 inches an hour.
That's a lot of water.
That is a lot of water, right? That's 2 weeks worth for an hour, right? Mm-hmm. So then when you start thinking about that, you're 2 inches, two weeks worth, 20 minutes, two times a week, right? Then you start to have to figure out that runtime so that you actually saturate your soil appropriately, not too much, too little. And again, the smart controller will do all these calculations for you when you put in things like watering with a spray head, watering cool season or warm season turf. I've got sandy soil or loamy soil. It's half in the shade. It's on a slope or not on a slope. These are all the things that go into the calculation of how long and how often to water, and your smart controller can do this for you.
That's very interesting.
Like the next iteration, it just comes out and walks around. You don't have to plug anything in. It just looks.
sticks an electronic finger in the soil.
That's right.
Check and see what it is. But you know, I think a lot of people don't realize, even a tenth of an inch of rain, when you spread it out over a big area, that's a lot of water. Like if you look at how much a tenth of an inch of rain dropping off of the roof of your house during a rainstorm, that's a tremendous amount of water that's coming down. And your sprinkler system's doing basically the same thing. You're recreating the rainfall to sustain the landscape that you have. And you know, in an inch and a half of water, that's an awful lot of water to have to deal with. And you want to make sure you put the right amount on.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the cost of the waste is going to be too much for all of us.
It adds up very, very quickly in San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements and our special guest, Richard Rusicchia, who is the author of the book Water Wise Gardening, which we're going to be talking about more when we come back right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman, John Clements, and our special guest, Richard Rusicchia. Apologize if I mispronounce your name. So
you got it right every time. I was really impressed.
Okay. He's the author of the book, Water Wise Gardening, and we've been talking to him about irrigation. He also works for Husqvarna Water, which 3 years ago bought Orbit Irrigation. And we've been talking about smart controllers. We've also, one thing that we haven't really touched too much on is the plethora of just sprinkler heads in general that are out there. And you and I were talking during the break, and prior to me going out and actually working in the yard over the past couple of months, used to go to whether it was Ewing or Site One or Lowe's or Home Depot or Dixie Line, and you'd go in if you needed a sprinkler head. You bought the half inch adapter, or you bought the half inch sprinkler head, brought it home, put it on the end of a half inch pipe, adjusted it, and away you went. Those half inch adapters are not available anymore. Now, everything, if you want to put a sprinkler head in your yard, everything comes with a pressure compensated adapter. And I think they're set for 30 and 40 pounds. They're adjustable. But what was the reason for that? Why did that evolve that way as compared to the old system?
Yeah, and by law in California now.
I should have known that.
that is something new, right, as of about 2 years ago.
Probably the same reason why I couldn't get my shower head from Amazon.
But as you mentioned, right, really most spray heads should operate about 30 PSI.
Okay.
Pounds per square inch. If you turn on your hose or your half inch line at home, you're probably looking, depending on what part of San Diego you live in, 60, 70, 80 pounds of pressure. Mm-hmm. And so when you're putting 80 pounds of pressure or even 50 pounds of pressure through something that should be at 30 pounds, what you get is a severe misting effect. And we've all seen it. We've seen the person that turns on their irrigation, their spray heads at home in their yard. And, you know, you can't hardly see the house because there's so much mist coming up from the irrigation. So by pressure compensating, you reduce the amount of misting, you reduce the amount of runoff or the evaporation in that irrigation, and in turn save water. The other thing it helps with is when you have a break, instead of flowing at 50, 60 PSI, you're flowing at a much lower rate. So the leak that results as a result of that is much less.
Well, that's interesting. I never would have thought of that, but it makes perfect sense.
The fascinating world of irrigation.
When you have somebody who's
better be boring.
When you have somebody who's an actual expert in the field telling you how it works, it makes perfect sense. So now that does make sense. The only thing that the biggest thing that I've had to deal with to compensate is those pressure compensated heads are about 3 to 4 inches taller than the old heads. So you have to take into account the riser that's coming up.
And they're a lot more expensive than they used to be. Boy, they have gone up.
That is true. That is true. But that does make perfect sense. Now, as far as the actual heads that you can get that go with them, there's, you know, Hunter was famous for many years for their stream rotor heads. Then they came up with the MP rotor heads. Toro, I remember, probably 40 years ago, my dad installing gear rotor heads, which put out streams of water. And then there's the old traditional, I call them rainbird heads, but I know everybody makes them.
The impact.
The impact heads, but also just a general spray head. Mm-hmm. There's a tremendous amount of variety in the market. How is the industry changing as far as that's concerned these days?
Well, we're trying to make each of the emission devices more efficient. And that's really the key. So pressure compensation is a part of that. We talked about spray heads earlier and the uniformity of a spray head being about 50%. If you look at maybe a rotor, right, one of the bigger sprinklers that you see on a sports field, maybe 70%. I mentioned drip up around 90, 93%. So we're always looking to make irrigation device more efficient. So then you mentioned the MP rotator, actually designed by Walla Walla Sprinkler in Walla Walla, Washington. Hunter bought the patent. And this distributes water with a larger droplet than a spray head. So more of the water lands where you want it to go. Now, it puts out a lot less water than a spray head. And so what's intuitively feels incorrect is you put on this water-saving nozzle and you have to increase the time on your controller. And people have a hard time actually increasing time and saying, I'm going to save water. But it's putting out half the water that your old spray head used to put out. So you might even have to not double your time, but increase it by about 75%.
Yeah, and when we had Greg Rubin on the, on the show, he was talking about how it probably more than other sprinklers mimics rainfall, where you where you have drops of water coming down rather than a stream of water falling onto the ground. It's really more drops of water, but like you said, you do it does seem counterintuitive. It's a water saving device, but you have to run the water longer.
Yeah.
To make it work. Most of my yard is on MPs, and they really it's a pretty impressive little teeny piece of technology, expensive piece of technology. Yeah. But
what does the MP stand for?
I don't know.
I'm asking you guys. I don't know what it stands for.
Good question. I don't know either. I've been in the industry 50 years. I don't know what MP stands for.
Yeah, but it's a fascinating. It's a fascinating system. Rainbird has a similar system to that as well. Although I remember when, and I don't know if the state is still giving out rebates for changing over your sprinkler systems, but when the drought was really hitting, but there were some stream rotor systems that Hunter MPs, they were given rebates on, but the equivalent or a similar equivalent in Rainbird did not qualify for those rebates.
Is that right?
The rotating nozzles. Yeah. And I think it was, and when you look at them in operation, you can see the difference. The Rainbird stream is much more of a stream, whereas the MPs, you can see the throw of it too, as it's rotating. Some of it's closer to the sprinkler head, some of it's farther away, and it has a different coverage as it's operating.
There's a couple of Italians here. So it's probably molto prezioso. You know,
it's matched, water,
very precious.
Matched precipitation.
Ah, okay.
Uniform application, low precipitation rate, works well for slopes and clay soil, as we alluded to, when it's much more water efficient. But earlier, the counterintuitive part, that's one of the big issues customers when they come in and they speak of water problems and you ask how long they're watering, as we said earlier. And they'll say 6 minutes, 9 minutes, 12 minutes. And you say, oh, you know, you're running a drip that needs to be run for an hour. And their face, like, I can't run that for an hour.
Well, George, I need to correct you when you ask them, well, how long are you watering for? Enough.
Yeah. Oh, some people do say enough. You are correct. Yes. I stand
what
corrected.
It needs.
Yes. It's getting, we water it plenty. Well, how much? Plenty. How much? 6 minutes. Twice a week. Okay. Let's do some forensics on that.
Yeah. It takes some questioning to drill down to an actual quantitative answer sometimes.
Exactly.
But you can get there.
And that's what I really tried to help people do with my book, right? Because our plant growers today, they don't put things like, what's the water use requirement of this plant? They don't put root depths. And so really to water properly, right, to water enough, you have to know these things, right? And then I step them through the calculation to figure out how much time to run, actually. But there is a pretty significant chapter on smart controllers that will take that calculation and do it for you. We talk about the different mission devices, whether it's drip, rotor, spray, how much water they put out, how efficient they are, and how all this plays into how long and how often to water.
And speaking of your book, Water-Wise Gardening is the name of the book. And what else can you tell us about the What else can you tell us? What are our customers going to find in your book?
Yeah, so look, I started writing a blog about water about 2010. Mm-hmm. And I produce a weekly article. And I find water very fascinating.
Clearly.
And and I find other people, once I start talking about it, some catch on as well. But the one thing I learned over the years is that people really don't have a good grip on how much water to use, how much water to apply, and how often to apply it. So trying to use some real world examples, I tried to tell the story at the beginning. I really spend a bit of time on why we need to conserve. Right, I think if they understand the why, then they're more likely to conserve. So we do that. And then I put the formulas, the root depths of a lot of plants in there in different regions across the U.S. And then, of course, go over the different emission devices and how much they put out so that people can start to figure out how long and how often to water.
And you have a class coming up with us next month on September 13th. Is that going to be here in
Poway? Right.
So mark your calendars now. If you'd like to come in and hear Richard speak, we've had a great time having you on the show. You will have copies of your book available, and we should have them.
We're going to get them to sell here as well.
We have them available shortly here in the store. So thank you very much, Richard. We really appreciate you coming in. This has just been
fascinating. He's got to come back because there's a lot of water questions.
We're going to have to bring him back. It's probably one of the biggest issues that we face in an industry right now is making it's not just conserving water, but getting the right amount of water onto the right plant at the right time. And things have definitely progressed a lot since I've been involved in this business. And it sounds like there's going to be even more coming down the pipeline so to speak.
I see what you did progress. There.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm looking forward to teaching the class. Not only will I bring my book to sell, but I will bring all sorts of sprinkler devices so we can look at that and understand how they work, why they work, how to maintain them. So we'll get a little hands-on too. And I think, I think most people can maintain and make additions to the irrigation system when needed. And we'll talk all about that as well. So it'll be a really exciting day.
I think that'll be outstanding. Yeah. You know, speaking of maintenance, that's one of the things that I do from time to time because they do shift. It's not a permanent installation. Just don't spray on the sidewalks or your driveway. Mm-hmm. I think weed eaters and other things just slowly knock things out of alignment from time to time. And you just got to go out and change it. So anyway, Richard Rusticcio, author of Waterwise Gardening, is going to be here on September at the Poway store on September 13th. Thank you very much for coming in. Thank you, Todd, for putting us in touch with Richard. It's been a great pleasure, and we hope to have you back again at some point in time in the future.
And thanks to Todd's parents, Jim and Lori, too. Best neighbors in the world.
Awesome.
Excellent. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to be back next week with another hour. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.